Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Wednesday, January 21st. I'm Taylor Heckert. Petersburg's high school boys basketball team competed at Wrangell's homecoming last weekend. KFSK sat down with head coach Rick Brock to hear about the rivalry games. Brock says the varsity Vikings scored major wins against the Wolves in every game they played.
It's hard to win one game on the road. It's extremely difficult to win two, but we played well enough both nights to win both games.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so walk me through kind of more in detail the performances of those games.
On Friday, the game was pretty close the first quarter, and then we've been working on our full court pressure, man pressure, and it started to kind of take effect right away. Even though we had a couple of starters on the bench in foul trouble right at the very beginning, one of the strengths that we have this year is the depth of our team. And so different guys stepped up and played well and even played out of position.
And when you say depth, what does that mean?
We have, I think, 9-10 guys that can play at the varsity level and play well. So that helps us when we substitute. In the tempo that we're playing at, we try to play more guys. So having more reserves, more guys coming off the bench helps.
And how common is it to have players have to play things that they're not maybe used to or don't normally do?
It happens, especially when you're in foul trouble or injuries, which we had another one of those on Friday. So, but one of our strengths is not only our depth, but the fact that we can kind of play different positions, kind of rotate through different spots within our lineup. And that really that was really true on Friday. And then Eli Anderson and Edgar Olson, they haven't played much varsity basketball this year, and they really stepped up and played well in that game.
Nice. And so we talked about that Friday game. How was Saturday?
Saturday, Wrangell played better. Their half-court defensive pressure throughout the first half hurt us. Then we weren't able to get out and bother them in our full-court defense. They'd made some adjustments. So a hard-fought battle. It was a one-possession game until about a minute and a half left in the second quarter. And then we went on a little bit of a run. I think we went in at halftime up 8 and then started out the third quarter and scored right away a couple possessions and just took that lead and just kind of kept it, stretched it. We played better in our interior. Aiden Knutson and Logan Tao both had 16 points for us that night. So both of them complimented each other well, passed the ball well, and we just kept building the lead again and were successful.
That's pretty exciting, especially against Wrangell, because yeah. I know it's a rivalry.
Yeah.
How did it feel for the team to win those games?
They were real happy, more so just because, you know, you have to experience a lot of things as the season goes. And Wrangell plays extremely hard, especially at home. If you beat them on Friday, you have to play really well on Saturday. So I think we were happy with just the way we kept our composure throughout the games. And then the fact that, they're there for each other. They were real happy that other players were stepping up and playing well. Just an overall positive weekend.
Yeah, and at this point in the season, you guys are winning more than you're losing. How do you feel about where we're at so far?
I like the space that we're in. We've talked a lot about ourselves and making sure that we are playing as well as we can. And so we're focusing on that. The games are, to get you ready for regionals, and the wins or losses set you up for who you play first and the bracket that you're in. But the ultimate goal is just to be playing our very best at the end of the year. So we're really trying to stay focused on that and understand that every day we go in, we're trying to make ourselves better and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And so we have games this weekend. Well, tell me the details on that.
We have Craig. Boys are coming over. Our girls are headed to Craig. Friday, Saturday games. It's actually our first varsity games of the year at home, which is kind of unique. We're here in the middle of January and we haven't played at home yet.
Are you excited about finally having a home then?
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be nice to play. You know, we have a great crowd. We have an awesome pep band, cheerleading squad, and it's always a good atmosphere here to play, for the guys to play in front of. So I know they're excited about that. And, anytime we don't have to get on the road and fight the weather, I sure appreciate that.
That was Vikings basketball coach Rick Brock talking with KFSK. Petersburg is hosting a boys basketball home game this Friday and Saturday, with details forthcoming. The Alaska legislature is back in session. Lawmakers in the House and Senate gaveled in yesterday afternoon. They have the next 4 months to act on a multitude of issues facing the state, from energy prices and the possibility of a gas pipeline, to the perennial question of how the state will pay its bills. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
In the Alaska State Capitol, it's a lot like the first day of school. Lots of smiles and hugs, some what did you do this summers, blue delphiniums and yellow roses adorn the dais. But despite the sunny mood, there is a cloud over this year's session.
We know we're facing even tighter revenue constraints than before. We know that demands will continue to rise, as they always have.
That's Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican. For years, Alaska has had a structural deficit. The state treasury takes in less money than it pays out. Last year, lawmakers approved a permanent fund dividend of just $1,000. That's an all-time low when adjusted for inflation. So this year, members of the bipartisan majority leading the state Senate say raising revenue is their top priority. Senator Lyman Hoffman, a Democrat from Bethel who co-chairs the Senate Finance Committee, says even a $1,000 dividend will be a challenge this year, with oil prices persistently low.
One way or another, if we are going to continue to provide the services that the people of Alaska have been accustomed to, that is the million-dollar question. Can we come up with revenue measures this session?
Lawmakers and Governor Mike Dunleavy have repeatedly butted heads on the best ways to raise money for state government and, of course, how to spend it. Last year, Dunleavy vetoed the sole significant revenue-raising bill to reach his desk, saying he wanted lawmakers to make fiscal reforms part of a larger package. The bill would have tweaked the state's corporate income tax structure to capture more revenue from out-of-state businesses. The state House and Senate plan to consider overriding that veto on Thursday morning after a two-day delay at Dunleavy's request, but it's unclear whether lawmakers will be able to muster the necessary supermajority. Pullman Republican Representative Delana Johnson, who leads the all-Republican House minority, says she'd like to see lawmakers consider something more comprehensive.
I think we need to take up things as a whole, not as just individual items.
And they may have a chance this year. Dunleavy told reporters in December that he's planning to roll out a fiscal plan that would serve as a bridge to brighter days ahead. He says growth in the permanent fund and a potential gas pipeline will eventually ease the pressure, but in the meantime,
I think the next 5 years, we're going to have to be real careful, and we're going to have in place things that will pay for government.
Dunleavy may provide some clues in his final State of the State address on Thursday. But it's not just fiscal issues facing the state this year. There's also the possibility of that natural gas pipeline connecting the North Slope and South Central Alaska moving forward. The developer of the project, which has been a dream for decades and is now a priority for the Trump administration, says it plans to make a final investment decision early this year. Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Geisel says that'll be the top issue in the Senate Resources Committee this year.
The Resources Committee will be looking at the resource itself and its impact and the project's impact. Then we'll be sending it on to the Finance Committee that will dig even deeper into the finances.
And more urgently, lawmakers say they'd like to craft a funding package for a variety of infrastructure projects Dunleavy vetoed from last year's budget. Trade groups recently sounded the alarm and asked lawmakers to quickly approve $70 million in construction funding, saying the vetoes risked as much as $700 million in federally backed construction projects. House Speaker Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham independent, says lawmakers plan to dig into that issue promptly.
You know, I think there's a lot riding on that decision. And I expect us to spend ample amount of time right from the opening moments looking at it closely and figuring out what and how we're going to approach it.
And that's still not all. There's education, healthcare, elections, a state pension plan, all priorities for various legislators in the coming session. What will get done, though, is an open question. Central Republican Senator Bert Stedman says lawmakers likely won't be able to address everything.
So we'll have to prioritize that list. There's only so much bandwidth in the legislature.
They have until May 20th to get it done. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Southeast Alaska's largest tribe has earned nearly $40 million from U.S. Navy contracts in Guantanamo Bay. Money some tribal members are concerned comes from supporting immigrant detention. While tribal corporation leadership says their operations are separate from the detention center on the base, what's happening on the ground may tell a different story. KTO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
Guantanamo Bay is the site of an active U.S. Navy base with about 6,000 military personnel. It also houses a detention facility. The Trump administration has been using the facility to detain migrants as part of its aggressive deportation policies. And Guantanamo Bay is where the Tlingit Haida Tribal Business Corporation, the tribe's business arm, currently has a contract. In 2018, the corporation announced the contract with the U.S. Navy. The corporation is now in the middle of a second contract, which is set to end in 2028. The value of both contracts have reached about $40 million. Tlingit Haida said the corporation's contract provides services to the Navy base. It does not support detention operations at the base. But some tribal members have doubts about that, like Clarice Johnson. She says she's been concerned about the contract since it began 7 years ago. But when the Trump administration vowed to hold thousands of immigrants there, it brought new urgency to her concerns.
It makes me ill to think of Clinton and Haida making money off the abuse of other people, especially those who are just looking for a better life.
Guantanamo Bay's detention center has been controversial, known for human rights violations for decades. Around the state, Alaska Native tribal members are protesting their corporation's investment in immigration detention centers. NANA Regional Corporation has been directly investing in ICE detention operations, including in Guantanamo Bay. When stories about inhumane conditions at those detention centers surfaced this fall, Johnson says she started posting in a Facebook group to make sure tribal members knew Tlingit and Haida also had connections to Guantanamo Bay.
I didn't want people to forget whenever they're criticizing other corporations for doing this that our own tribe was also participating.
Her posts garnered discussion with other tribal members who also posted concerns. In response to public criticism, Tlingit and Haida issued a statement in December saying the contract is, quote, strictly limited, unquote, to operating and maintaining boats and ports, and that the corporation is obligated to continue the work until the contract ends. But Johnson is worried that some of those boats transport migrants to the detention center in Guantanamo Bay. Richard Reinhart is the CEO of Tlingit Haida Tribal Business Corporation. He says it's against taking on contracts that assist in immigration detention.
We don't have anything to do with that.
Instead, he reiterated that the contract is related to vessel operation and maintenance, including a ferry to and from the airport. However, Reinhart says he's heard that the ferry the corporation operates may be used to transport detainees, including migrants. But he says Tlingit Haida Tribal Business staff aren't involved with that process.
There are times I hear, I've not seen this, but my manager there tells me that they do come across and they'll put somebody on the ferry. It's usually late at night and it's all just their, it's all their vehicles, all their staff. They move across and they go to the airport. But we have the only ferry going from the airport to the windward side where everything is.
At least 700 migrants have been detained at Guantanamo Bay this past year and were initially flown there, according to previous reporting by NPR and the New York Times. In an email to KTOO in response to follow-up questions, Reinhart says he could not speak to how many migrants have been transported via the corporation's ferry. KTOO could not confirm whether or not there's another way migrant detainees are transported from the airport to the facilities they're held in. Reinhart says involvement in migrant transport is, quote, outside our visibility and control and is not tracked, directed, or managed by Tlingit Haida Tribal Business Corporation as part of our contractual duties, unquote. Though Guantanamo Bay is often linked with the detention facility, Reinhart says he doesn't think a lot of people realize that it's primarily a naval base. Clarice Johnson says even incidental involvement in migrant detention is still too close for comfort.
Now, I understand why they want to claim 6 degrees of separation from ICE, but I think that their actions at Guantanamo Bay place them in much closer proximity than many tribal citizens realize.
And she wants to know if the tribal corporation will take a stance on migrant detention as more opportunities to profit from it arise.
Will Tlingit and Haida jump on the money train, or will they actually have guidelines on which contracts they will bid on?
Reinhart says that most Tlingit Haida tribal business contracts are with the U.S. military. And those contracts, he says, support the corporation's mission, create more funding for the tribe. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
For Canvas K, I'm Taylor Heckert.